Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is 1762, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The governor, a man by the name of John Penn, rushes across town to the home of Benjamin Franklin. It's in the early in the morning, recorded as 2 a.m. The governor is frightened. He needs help. There's a mob closing on Philadelphia to kill Native Americans. This scene is one of many illustrating the many lives of Benjamin Franklin in a new book, Ingenious, a biography of Benjamin Franklin's scientist. Richard Munson is the author. I congratulate him and welcome him. Richard, at that moment, Franklin is a brave man. What does John Penn ask of him? Where does this mob come from called the Paxton Boys? Good day to you.
Good day to you. Thanks for the invitation. Paxton Boys were a gang, basically, in the Western settlements that were opposing the Indian tribes that had owned that or had been involved in that land for ages. They had slaughtered innocent Indians or Native Americans, and they were on their way to Philadelphia, where they hoped that they would slaughter even more. And John Penn, the governor of the Commonwealth, who had never been a good friend of Franklin's, they tended to fight each other, but he was desperate. He couldn't do much to stop the gang, he thought. But Franklin, who we mostly think of as a clever, humorous, you know, fun sort of guy, as you note, he showed great bravery this day. He actually, with two other people, went to where they crossed the river on their way to Philadelphia and talked them down with just simply the power of his logic and his forcefulness of his, you know, ethics. He was a brave man.
Very brave man, but we want to note here that this is not a young man. He was born in 1706. He's 56 years old, and in the 18th century, that is senior. Now, we know he will live into his 80s, as did one or two of his ancestors, but still, he didn't know that. And he's out in the middle of the night. I think he had three companions. He'd raised a company back in Philadelphia. But he was facing a mob that had already been homicidal, chopping up and massacring men, women, and children in Lancaster County some weeks before. So who is this man at 56, the governor begs?
He's far more complex of a character than I think his basic image of today is. When we think of Benjamin Franklin, we tend to think of this gentleman who gives us a little wink and a sly smile and tells, you know, great little proverbs like early to bed, early to rise. We think of him as a diplomat who negotiated arms and money from the French to be able to win the Revolutionary War. What we really don't have much of an image of him is two things. One is the scientist, which I think we'll return to. But also, he was just one brave man who was ethical and recognized that these Paxton boys were homicidal and had to be stopped. And he, you know, if you will, raised his hand, got on his horse with a couple of others and faced down a mob and turned them back.
This is the man also who is critical, signs all the documents for the revolution. But we go back to the beginning. His mother, Massachusetts Bay Colony, Abaya. But it is striking to me that Franklin was never a religious demonstration. He did not attend church, nor did his language reflect church going. Though he was surrounded by Quakers in Philadelphia, and he comes out of the Massachusetts Bay Puritan colony. So I'd say, Richard, that he practiced a religion of, what should we call it? I know he was a Mason, but that isn't adequate to it. How did you come to think of his understanding? He was surrounded by extremely pious people. Was he in tension with them?
I think he was a restless young lad that wasn't really happy with his father doing extremely long blessings before and after the meals. He found them tedious and boring, similar to what he thought of Sunday sermons. It was far better in his mind to be reading books than it was to be listening to pontificators go off about how they should become better Presbyterians. So I think at the end, as he grew a bit older, he began to realize that he thought that salvation was not something that he was looking for. He thought he would be judged by his good works. And that's how he approached his life. And you're exactly right. His father was a very pious man, made his way up through the Puritan ranks to become something of a tithing man, if you will. But Franklin himself once referred to himself as a deist, was the closest term he could come to describing what his religious affiliation was. And that tied in very well to his science mindset, because the deism, at least at that time and how long it lasted, was a look at recognizing the wonders of nature and trying to understand, you know, how God's creation, you know, reflected, you know, the need for doing good works and having a view of experimentation and observation of the world around him.
Yes, we'll see this. We'll see this tension often in some of the science. The big moment, though, comes when he's an apprentice to his older brother, James, as a printer, and he runs away. He runs away from his family. He runs away from Boston. He flees to Philadelphia. Why? What was he? Can we guess what he was thinking? Did he ever write a detail in his autobiography?
Well, he did break his contract with his brother, who ran a print shop, and Benjamin was an apprentice, supposedly working there, I think, for 8 years was his contract. But the two of them fought. And I think Benjamin, at his core, was just this independent young lad that didn't like anybody, you know, giving him directions as to what he should be doing. And so the two fought because, you know, his brother got taken away for a time from being the publisher. Ben, as a teenager, got to run it, enjoyed the independence, but his brother thought that he was getting far too independent, basically smacked him around. And young Ben didn't like that. And basically, without telling anybody, broke his contract and went off to Philadelphia, where he tried to begin a new life as a printer without an apprenticeship contract.
One detail about that apprenticeship. Who was Silas Duguid?
Benjamin's brother was one of the first independent journalists and had sort of a very snarky tone to him, and surrounded himself with very creative writers. And he wouldn't accept anything from his young 15-year-old, you know, brother, because he thought he was too much of a, you know, young whippersnapper. But Benjamin would write little essays and slip them under his brother's door. And they became printed. It was not unusual at the time that people would write anonymous little ditties. And Franklin, as a 15-year-old teenager, wrote with the voice of a woman named Silas Duguid. Here he is, 15-year-old man, and he's writing about with the voice of a widowed, you know, 45, 50-year-old woman who has a cantankerous view towards anything that might impede upon her freedom and her view towards how the elite are not to be followed. So he just had, even at a very early age, he had this snarky tone where he was able to make his points, but do it through other people's personas. In this case, this widowed woman who was, you know, his voice piece to go after the elites of Boston.
The book is Ingenious, a biography of Benjamin Franklin's scientist. Richard Munson is the author. We're going to Philadelphia and quickly through the rise of Benjamin Franklin's empire and then becomes the experimenter. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.